professor of science and religion at Oxford, and which I'd really recommend. Can we have my PowerPoint up, Douglas? It's coming now. He starts by saying this: like many in the 1960s, I grew up thinking science was at war with religious faith. My youthful love of science seemed to rule out any interest in religious belief, which I regarded as irrational nonsense best left to intellectual low achievers. I confidently expected that science would answer all my questions, and if it couldn't answer them, they weren't valid questions in the first place. Atheism seemed the only viable intellectual option for a thinking scientist such as myself. Then, he says, something happened to me in my first year studying science at Oxford, something which I still don't fully understand to this day. To cut a long story short, I realized, much to my surprise and irritation, that Christianity made a lot more sense of things than atheism. I began to see things in a new way, as if my eyes had been opened. So he's called his book Enriching Our Vision of Reality. It's about how we see things. And I want to suggest to you today that we need both science and faith to see the truth about who we are and about the world around us. Science and faith are not at war, they're partners. We need them both. And I'm going to offer you some reasons, some clues, we could say, to why science and faith might work well together rather than being in conflict. The first is the congruence or match between our rationality within and the rationality and order of the world around us, between our minds and the universe. What you might call the deep intelligibility of the universe. We're so familiar with this that most of the time we take it for granted. But it could have been different, couldn't it? It could have been a disorderly chaos rather than an orderly cosmos. Or it could have had a structure, but one that we couldn't understand. But in fact, there's this congruence between our minds and the way the universe works. Is that just a happy accident? Einstein said, the most incomprehensible thing about the universe is that it is comprehensible. Even in the area of quantum physics, which bears so little relation to our everyday experience, there are mathematical patterns that we can understand and which make sense to us. Science is happy to exploit that characteristic of the world, but it struggles to explain it. Why do human beings uniquely in the universe have this capacity to understand how it works? Science comes from the Latin word meaning to know. Genesis chapter 1 gives us a beautifully ordered account of creation. I don't think it's intended to be a literal or a scientific account of creation. Hard to see how there could be 7 literal days when the sun is not created till day 4. Okay, but poetically, it is saying that the world is a place of order and beauty. It is carefully structured. It's not chaotic. God said this, and it was so, and it was good, and there was morning and evening. That pattern is repeated. It's not random. There's a mind behind creation. The great astronomer Johannes Kepler called science thinking God's thoughts after him. And that is why, surely, modern science emerged from a Western Christian viewpoint. Because people expected to find order in the universe, and when they looked for it, there it was. Hinduism or Buddhism, for instance, never led to that kind of serious scientific endeavor. The Chinese produced great inventions, the Greeks discovered mathematics and philosophy, but modern scientific method came out of a Western Christian worldview. 7 out of the 10 founders of the Royal Society, the first official scientific body in the 17th century, were committed Christians. So science, I want to tell you, is a very Christian thing to do. And when you read about scientists and their new discoveries, they always use words like amazing, marvelous, wonderful, brilliant, kind of spontaneously responding in praise and wonder at this amazing world that we find ourselves in. So that's the first clue. The second clue is the extraordinary fine-tuning of the universe for life, and particularly for human life, sometimes called the anthropic principle. Right from the beginning, the universe possessed certain qualities essential to the production of intelligent life. The existence of carbon-based life on Earth is based on an extraordinary, unlikely balance of physical and cosmological parameters. If any one of them was just very slightly different, we wouldn't be here. Martin Rees, I think he's no longer, but he was the Astronomer Royal and first president of the Royal Society. He says he has no religious beliefs at all, but he wrote a book called Just Six Numbers, The Deep Forces That Shape the Universe. And the book is about how if any of those numbers had been just slightly different, set at the beginning in a single Genesis event, as it's described, then we wouldn't be here. People sometimes say it's like aiming with one bullet at a target the size of a 50p piece on the other side of the universe and hitting it with your only shot. It's incredibly unlikely that we're here. To give you another example, if the giant asteroid that crashed into the Gulf of Mexico 66 million years ago and wiped out the dinosaurs had been a second earlier or later, we wouldn't be here. I couldn't resist this Larson cartoon, which says that's the real reason that dinosaurs became extinct. Smoking. But it's got nothing to do with what I'm saying. But if the asteroid had fallen into slightly marginally deeper water, then the dinosaurs would have survived and the mammals wouldn't have taken over. If it had fallen into slightly shallower water, both the mammals and the dinosaurs would have been wiped out and we wouldn't be here. Now, of course, that doesn't prove that there's a God who made the world and who controls it. We could just be a freak accident. We could be a billion to one shot in the cosmic casino. But it does show how science and its discoveries are consistent with the idea who created a world in some sense for human beings, with the intention from the beginning that they would be the climax of creation. And that's exactly what we find in the first chapter of the Bible. So science is possible because there's a congruence between the order and beauty of our universe and our ability to understand it. And it shows that the universe is extraordinarily well adjusted for our existence. Then thirdly, I want to think about how science and faith reach conclusions about what is true. Richard Dawkins suggests that they approach things very differently, that one is rational and one isn't. I'm going to argue that they are in fact very similar, that they're cousins rather than enemies. Richard Dawkins says in The Selfish Gene, faith is a state of mind that leads people to believe something in the total absence of supporting evidence. If there were good evidence, good supporting evidence, then faith would be superfluous and the evidence would compel us to believe. Well, is that true? According to Alistair McGrath, virtually nobody in the academic world today believes that, because actually science and faith are very similar in the way in which they reach conclusions. They both look at the evidence and try and understand what it's telling them about the universe. And neither of them actually can produce certainty. John Polkinghorne, who's another scientist and theologian, has pointed out that no form of human truth-seeking inquiry can reach certainty about its conclusions. Human beings have to commit themselves to beliefs that we cannot prove, but we have good reason to accept are true. How do you know the sun is going to rise tomorrow? How do you know that your wife or husband loves you? You can't prove those things, but you have to build your life on those assumptions based on the evidence that you have. And so science works on theory and theories, and theory comes from a Greek word meaning I see. In other words, we use our imagination to see and understand and make sense of the world around us. People sometimes say evolution is just a theory, as if that undermines it. But I want to say everything's just a theory. The Christian faith is just a theory. It's a way of seeing things. And the question is, does the theory make sense of the evidence? Let's just take light as an example of how science works. In the 17th century, the great Dutch astronomer Christian Huygens argued that light was a wave, behaving in similar ways to other wave phenomena like sound. But then in the 18th century, Newton persuaded most people that light was a series of particles or corpuscles. Until in 1805, Thomas Young at Cambridge passed light through two slits and demonstrated it could be refracted. And that meant that it was apparently a wave. So people decided the only way it could pass through space was there must be something there called the ether. And that was a great theory until in 1887, two Americans called Michelson and Morley proved that the ether wasn't there. And that meant the light was turning out to be a lot stranger than anyone understood. In 1905, Einstein came up with a brilliant idea called the photoelectric effect, which explained a lot of the puzzling things about light people had found in experiments. But his theory, his way of seeing, made no sense to anyone. It met with intense opposition because it suggested that light was both a wave and a particle. That seemed totally implausible. And eventually in 1926, Paul Dirac developed quantum field theory, showing that both wave and particle models together provided the best understanding of the nature of light. There's a famous quote by one Nobel Prize winning physicist to another. And he said this, "We're all agreed your theory is crazy. The question that divides us is whether it's crazy enough to have a chance of being correct." He also said, "Reality is a word we must learn to use correctly." In other words, science isn't that easy, is it? It's not just about accumulating facts and letting them speak for themselves, as Richard Dawkins likes to suggest. It's not true that science is about facts and theology is about wild, irrational speculation. Both science and theology are looking at reality and trying to make sense of it. Science interprets observations, it has to. And a fascinating example is a German chemist called August Kekulé. And he discovered the circular structure of benzene in 1865. It wasn't until 25 years later, at an anniversary celebration, when he was a very famous and celebrated scientist, that he finally got the courage to admit where he got the idea from. One night he had a dream of a snake chasing its own tail, and suddenly it clicked in his mind that benzene was a circular ring of carbon atoms. But he was too embarrassed to admit that that's where he got the idea from for 25 years. You see, science has to use imagination to come up with a way of seeing a theory that makes sense of the world. And often there are things, as light, that don't fit into the theory, but we keep trying to understand it better. Darwin said about his theory of evolution, "There are a crowd of difficulties about it, some so grave that I can never reflect on them without being staggered. And yet it is, in the best of my judgment, not fatal to my theory." Now, in the same way, every Christian has a series of things about our faith that we struggle with. And an obvious one is the issue of suffering. Some people, like Stephen Fry being a recent example, say that there just cannot be a God because of the terrible suffering in the world. End of debate. But Christians say, well, maybe we need to think a bit harder about this. You know, does the Christian story of a God who comes and suffers with us and who saves the world through suffering make better sense of a world in which we suffer than the alternatives? Or take those strange ideas at the heart of the Christian faith, the Trinity, God is three in one, or the incarnation of Christ, that he is fully human and fully divine. Is that just blind, unthinking, irrational faith, as Dawkins would have us believe? Or is what at first seems to be irrational a kind of gateway into a deeper grasp of reality? Something that stretches and expands our minds, something we would never have made up. Think about light or quantum physics, you know, enormously complex and mind-stretching. Well, if there is a creator behind that world with those things in it, then he must be surely more complex and hard to understand than they are. Alistair McGrath says on the first page of his book, "In my first year at Oxford, I realized, much to my surprise and irritation, that Christianity made much more sense of things than atheism. I began to see things in a new way as if my eyes had been opened, and I realized that Christian faith and science were two different ways of exploring a complex and wonderful reality. Science and faith are more like cousins than enemies, and each pursues different aspects of the truth. If you want to know how old the earth is or how far the earth is from the sun, ask a scientist. I don't think the Bible is designed to give you answers to those questions." But there are other questions that science can't answer. Sir Peter Medawar was one of the greatest 20th century biologists, and he said there are questions that science cannot answer and no conceivable advance in science would empower it to answer. And then the other guy there is Steve Jones, a geneticist, and he says science cannot answer the questions that philosophers and children ask. Why are we here? What is the point of being alive, and how ought we to behave? These may be important questions, says Steve Jones, but scientists are no more qualified to answer them than anyone else. Now, Steve Jones is an atheist, but if I may say so, he's a wise one on this subject. Because both science and faith need to be wise about which questions we can answer and which questions we can't. Richard Dawkins, for instance, says that human beings are fundamentally survival machines programmed to propagate our genes. Are we fundamentally survival machines for DNA? Is that true to your experience, to your hopes and dreams, to your loves and joys? Have Barry and Alice come here today to baptize a little survival machine for genes? Is that fundamentally who Annabelle is? Pretty hard to believe that and live a normal life, isn't it? Francis Crick, who ran into the Eagle Pub after his discovering DNA, saying, "We have found the secret of life," writes this: "You, your joys and sorrows, your memories and ambitions, your sense of personal identity and free will are in fact no more than the behavior of a vast assembly of nerve cells and their associated molecules." Really? No more than nerve cells? The writer Tom Wolfe said about that kind of statement, "Sorry, but your soul just died." You know, don't let your soul die because your soul is you. We human beings are not just slime plus time. You know, we're much more than a bunch of genes or nerve cells. To say that is a bit like saying Hamlet or Mozart's Requiem are just spots of ink on paper. Well, they are spots of ink on paper. But if you say that is all they are, then you missed the whole point about Mozart's Requiem or Hamlet, haven't you? You missed their entire purpose. We share 98.4% of our genes with chimpanzees, and perhaps more surprising, 50% of our genes with bananas. But we're not 98% chimp or 50% banana, are we? There's something unique and precious about human beings that makes life worth living and is far more than just the genes and nerve cells that make us up. So don't be fooled by this idea that science has disproved faith. Of course it hasn't. There. Not enemies, but cousins, and science is a very Christian thing to do. And many of the great scientists through history have been Christians. They're answering different questions, and we need both. And together they will enrich our vision of reality and help us to understand this wonderful world in which God has placed us. We need believing scientists and scientific believers. G.K. Chesterton was an agnostic until the age of 29, and he returned to Christian faith and wrote this: "We've returned to it not because of this argument or that argument, but because it is an intelligible picture of the world. Because the theory, when it is adopted, works out everywhere. It's like trying on a coat and finding it fits in every crease. It makes sense of reality. It's a theory that fits, that works." So I want to encourage you, wherever you are today, to explore the Christian faith. Because if you don't, I believe you won't understand our world, or you won't understand who you are and why you're here. Look at the evidence and try to see if it matches reality. That's what both faith and science in their own ways are trying to do. And if we're wise, we will listen to both of them.